Time for Thinking Real Estate. Laura Dwyer Schlettke, Bill Schlettke. We're social distancing today.
Well,
today on this edition.
Someday it will end, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. But you know, you can get your hair cut today, right? If you can get in, because everybody has been waiting for so long. I can't get into my hairdresser till the 26th. Is when our appointment is. My appointment is. I know, right? Well, I'll be able to see the difference.
I'm not losing any sleep over a haircut.
Aren't you?
No.
Oh, my God. Well, it's a good thing you can't see me. That's for sure. I guess I could take a picture of me and send it to you. But anyhow.
That's okay.
So how's things at the radio station?
But we're still on the air.
That's always encouraging.
It is. That's a plus.
Yeah. Yep. So anyhow, before we get into the issues, I'm waiting for Bill to come sit with me. Just want to remind people there's a city council meeting tomorrow, and there's a couple of interesting items on the agenda. One is special assessments, rolling special assessment bills into property tax bills so that your lender can pay them from escrow, because right now you can't do that, because it is a separate bill. I would encourage people to call or email their council person and encourage them to vote yes on that. You have any questions on that, Greg?
No, I guess it sounds like a good idea.
Well, yeah, because right now if you go to sell your house or you want to roll an assessment, you just want your lender to pay it in your escrow, you can't, because it's billed separately. And first of all, escrow companies are not set up to pay three separate bills. They're only set up to pay two. And so they would require it to be paid off if someone's purchasing a house or selling a house. And this really affects more of the lower-priced homes, because someone with a lower-priced home probably does not have the extra cash to pay that assessment off, nor will the buyer have the cash.
Right.
Because they probably have the max of 3.5% for an FHA loan, and they're probably already asking the seller to pay some of their closing costs. So it's really important that we get this on our tax bills so that the mortgage companies will pay them through escrow. And then the other one, Will Forgrave has an interesting assessment on their change for the special assessment, where if you got 50% of the property owners in an assessment district, so let's say Franklin Street, they got 50% of the owners, and it equaled more than 50% of the assessed value, then it would take a majority of council, a supermajority, in order to pass that assessment.
I'm not understanding that.
So if you had, let's see, there's 46 properties that are getting assessments on Franklin Street.
Right.
You would have to have 24 property owners. And I think the assessed value is $500 and some odd. So you would have to have 250,000 plus a little bit to have both 24 plus 200, you know, whatever the makeup is of that particular assessment district. So 50% of the property owners plus 50% of the assessed value.
Wait, are you talking about one that's initiated by the citizens or one?
Yeah, one that's initiated by the citizens.
You're going to make that distinction. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, because it's a huge difference, because you wouldn't want.
Can you hear Bill? Because he's a little further away from
you.
No,
I can't.
Okay. What I said is, I'm assuming that that has to do with an assessment which is done by a petition of the citizens along the particular street, as opposed to action by the city council.
Correct.
Because you would not want that to be. You wouldn't want to require a supermajority by city council if it is one initiated by the council, because it might be a street which is a feeder street into or out of the city, and so the citizens, they wouldn't want it, so they would require, they could get a vote of the citizens to require a supermajority of the council. In other words, you wouldn't be able to do the infrastructure plan that you wanted to do as a municipality if you had to have the vote of a supermajority of the council members each time to do that.
Right. No, this is one that if the citizens on that street, if there's someone who's really against an assessment and they feel so compelled, they can go out and get more than 50% of the property owners plus the value of the special assessment has to be more than 50%. The properties have to be more than 50% of the value. Then it will require a supermajority of the council to pass that assessment.
Why are they trying that? Also, I'm not sure that that is able to be done by the city council, because I believe that particular provision for petition by citizens is under state law. Understand that the assessment process for a municipality, for a city, is very vague, the enabling statute. It's not like the Township Enabling Act, which is much more specific. But for a city to initiate it, it's up to the city. I'm not certain that that's the case for a petition initiated by the citizens along a particular boulevard or a particular street. Somebody, they need to have Matt Haggerty check that out.
Well,
the State Enabling Act would allow it.
Right. I assume Matt looked into this. It wouldn't be on agenda if our attorney didn't review it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure that's something to make sure of. There's no point in adopting an ordinance if the State Enabling Act won't permit it. And as I'm talking here, Greg, my dogs are looking at me, wondering why I haven't fed them yet. And both of them have gotten up on the couch here and are eyeing me to say, come on, feed me, feed me.
And then the third thing that's on the agenda is a water rate increase that we approved in the budget, or the budget was based on this water rate increase, and this is just to sustain our water and sewer facilities, keep them functioning so that we have a healthy community.
What happened to the water rate issue?
We're going to deal with that in the fall. Jonathan's working on numbers now, and you'll see some more information come out about this late summer, I believe.
Well, so the rate change hasn't happened yet?
No. Well, this is no. This rate change is strictly to keep.
No, I'm talking about the one which changes the rates for commercial users and the one.
Well, that one already, that happened last November.
Yeah, that's what I'm
they took
about.
The tiers out, and everybody's on the same.
Right.
Same schedule.
Has a lawsuit been initiated over that? I thought consumers were initiating a lawsuit.
They dropped it.
Without any kind of compensation or anything coming from the city, it just got dropped?
Yes, correct.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah. Actually, consumers have been a really good ally for the city right now.
So
they're
offering reduce rates for the other, for normal citizens like you and me?
No. Right. Water costs what water costs. It's not any cheaper by the dozen, like eggs.
Well, no, but I'm saying if the commercial users are now paying at the same rate, they're not paying at a lower tier, didn't that assist the people who were in the higher tier, like, you know, the normal residential user, didn't that reduce their water charges?
No, everybody's at the same rate now.
So what's happening is, since everybody's at the same rate, who's getting the excess? Who's getting the surplus?
Oh, my gosh. You sound like everybody else.
Right.
It is there. It's going to day-to-day operations of that facility. We got to maintain and improve our – it's vital that we have water and sewage.
All right.
Operational.
Okay. All right, gotcha.
Facilities.
All right. Just double-checking.
Right. We're not talking about a whole lot of money. Are you in on this, Greg?
I'm here.
You're awfully quiet.
I'm here.
Never a dull moment when we're together, is it?
Dazed and confused, but I'm here.
Okay. All right. So, Bill, I have a client who sold her house on a land contract, and the guy didn't pay. Now she's she's been in possession of the property for a while, and she's going to sell it again. And she's having difficulty because the land contract was recorded. We don't know where the person is, and we need to get him off the title.
Yeah, this is just one of, like, a zillion different title issues that I end up dealing with. And on this one, what's interesting about this one is that if you're a land contract seller, there are two legal methods to regain possession of the property, to oust the person that's in the property and get the property back. One is, excuse me, I'm a little bit under the weather this morning. The first one is forfeiture in the district court, and it's a proceeding which is less, and the other one is foreclosure in the circuit court. Forfeiture is faster. When you get, you send out a 15-day notice of intent to forfeit the contract. And I'm assuming in order to use forfeiture, there has to be a provision in the contract saying that the seller can forfeit the interest of the purchaser when the purchaser goes into default. But forfeiture is under the summary proceeding statute, which is the same thing as the statute that allows for eviction of a tenant. And the process is you send out a 15-day notice of intent to forfeit the contract, and it says you have 15 days in which to bring the contract current, you know, make the payments that are due, bring the payments that are due, pay them. And if you do not, then I'm going to initiate a summary proceeding in the district court, get a judgment against you for the amount which is owed. And I want to differentiate the amount, not the total amount that's owed on the land contract, but only the amount of the payments that are in default. Now, if you had a one-year land contract, for example, and the 1 year is up, that means the entire balance is due. But if it's a 10-year contract, you're 2 years into it, they're 2 months behind, 3 months behind, all you can do is sue for the payments that are in default. So now you file your complaint, you have it served on the defendant, who presumably is in the property. The defendant, the purchaser defendant, then either files an answer, you go on the court docket. It's a streamlined docket. It's not like waiting in the circuit court a year for a trial. It's going to be a trial in a matter of weeks. If the purchaser simply defaults, you take a judgment. In either event, when the judgment is entered, you don't immediately get possession of the property. Now you have to wait 90 days. The purchaser has 90 days in which to bring the payments current and pay the court costs, pay the amount of the judgment, in which to preserve his interest in the property. And so it's relatively fast, but you can't accelerate the balance due. You can only sue for the amount of the payments. The issue that Laura's, and I'll get the foreclosure in a minute if we have time, otherwise we'll push that off till next week. In Laura's case, the seller didn't need to file forfeiture or foreclosure to get possession of the property. And there's an interesting little twist in Michigan law, because the law says that you can regain peaceable possession of the property. In other words, regain possession without a breach of the peace. You can't simply go in and toss the land contract purchaser out. In this case, the purchaser actually voluntarily moved out. Just said, essentially said, I'm no longer interested in the property. Didn't have enough investment into the property. Didn't have enough equity into it, and just abandoned the property. When the purchaser does that, now the seller can simply retake possession. There's no need to do a forfeiture or foreclosure, except the hang-up is that when the seller who has retaken possession now wants to resell the property to somebody else, the title company will not insure title simply based upon an affidavit from the seller or a disinterested third party that the seller got possession peaceably, and instead will require either a forfeiture or a foreclosure action. So it's even though the law permits it, because of the necessity for title insurance, the title insurance company is not going to insure that title despite the compliance with applicable law by the seller. So this is just one of those nuances. I have another land contract foreclosure that I'm about to start, actually forfeiture on this one, where again the purchaser has voluntarily moved out, But in this one, the title company is requiring, because the land contract purchaser is deceased, I have to file, and I already filed an estate in the county where the purchaser resided when he passed away. I then have to file a quiet title action in the circuit court where the property is located, and the title company is requiring that I file a forfeiture action against the deceased purchaser's estate in order to quiet title, so that now the owner, the seller, will be able to have clear title and sell the property. So it isn't always as easy as one thinks when you sell on a land contract.
Or sometimes when you just sell, things pop up.
In terms of title, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, that's what keeps lawyers like me busy. Realtors like you busy, too, yeah.
Or Ron Ellison, the title guy.
Is that his title, the title guy?
The title guy.
So, but yeah, this, you know, it's interesting, Greg, that despite the lockdown, despite sheltering in place, I have just been swamped with work, and Laura's business is just going gangbusters. I know she needs more listings because things are just selling. They're going like crazy. I mean, when interest rates hit 2.85% last week, you wonder, how can somebody not buy a property?
Good deal.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's a little harder to buy because I think lenders are worried about the unemployment situation, right? So you got to make sure your credit's intact and you have some down payment.
Yeah, since I do have a little bit of time, I'll tell you about the other option for a land contract seller. I'll also, if I have time, distinguish or explain why I prefer, if I'm representing a seller, I prefer that the seller give title and take back a mortgage, because my options for getting the property back or getting the mortgage amount paid off, or the amount which is owed paid off, I'm better off with the mortgage because of what the law allows me to do. But at any rate, the second option.
So it's easier to foreclose on a mortgage than it is a land contract?
Yes, much easier. Much easier, but I don't have time to explain all that. Let me just explain what, if I'm a land contract seller and I've got a purchaser that is goes into default 1 month, and then I file a forfeiture, they bring it current. In other words, they're constantly going into default. Most land contracts provide for acceleration of the balance due. You have to have that clause in the land contract as well. So you want to make certain that if you're a seller in a land contract, that the land contract form that is being used provides the remedies of both forfeiture and acceleration of the balance due. And acceleration of balance due, the typical clause says, if a land contract purchaser goes into default for a period in excess of 30 days, some of them say 45 days, but the one I use is 30 days. If the purchaser goes into default for more than 30 days, the seller can send out a notice of acceleration, or, you know, the law doesn't require the notice, but many land contract forms say you have to send out a notice. Notice telling the purchaser that you have accelerated the balance due. The entire balance is immediately due and payable. And in which instance now, if the land contract purchaser doesn't pay off the balance, and they almost never do because the reason they're in the land contract is they couldn't get a mortgage in the first place. So now, what happens is the seller can't go to district court and do the fast forfeiture, but what the seller can do is go into the circuit court, commence a foreclosure by a complaint filed in the circuit court, have it served on the land contract purchaser. The purchaser typically is going to default, so I take a default judgment. Now, what happens when the judgment is entered, I now have a foreclosure sale conducted by the sheriff. Same as a mortgage foreclosure sale. Typically, the only person who bids in at the foreclosure sale is the land contract seller. And if the property is worth less than what the balance is that is due on the land contract, the seller bids in for that amount, and there's a judgment for the difference between what he bid in and the amount of judgment is a deficiency judgment that the seller can then go after the land contract purchaser. So the advantage of a foreclosure, even though it takes longer, even though it's more expensive, is I can accelerate the balance due, and I preserve my right to a deficiency judgment, which I can't do in a forfeiture action. So if you're a land contract seller and the purchaser goes into default, you want to be aware of what your remedies are. Have a conversation with the lawyer that's going to represent you in the forfeiture or the foreclosure and getting this taken care of. And have a heart-to-heart conversation about whether or not the best avenue is forfeiture or whether or not it's going to be foreclosure. Is the seller going to come back and occupy the property, or are they going to turn around and sell it? They're going to turn around and sell it. You do your title commitment. You got to do a title commitment anyway, when or a title search anyway, when you do a forfeiture or foreclosure. Because you, in a foreclosure particularly, you have to include everybody as a defendant who has an interest in the property. So there are details that need to be addressed in either of those processes.
This is why you have a good attorney that knows real estate law, and you get a good realtor like me.
You know, she didn't mention me when she said a good lawyer.
Well, you don't do a lot of, you don't do.
I do foreclosures. I don't do closings. Residential closings.
Right.
Is what you're saying, right?
So you need listings, Laura?
Yeah, I need listings. I've got some new commercial property on the market, 700 West Franklin, and then 615 West Franklin. The first one is the Design Centers building, which is a nice, great building. You can do so many different things in there. You could divide it and have separate entrances. It has good parking. It's on the northwest corner of Franklin and 4th, and then on the opposite corner is Z Studios building. And the first one's at $185,000, and then the Z Studio building, which is an old gas station, but it's very cool on the inside. Good working space with a nice office area. And that one is $110,000. Then we have the one at 614 West Michigan Avenue that the car just ran through the front of the building over the weekend. Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
So that one will have some new renovation going on. And that one's at 569.9, and it's in, it goes all the way through to Wildwood, has a separate outbuilding, great parking, just a great piece of property and good structural condition, and there's a lot that you could do with that particular building. Plus, I have one residential property that we have reduced the price to $79.9. It's 214 Pierce. It's a three-bedroom, two bedrooms up, one bedroom down. It's move-in ready, absolutely move-in ready. Hardwood floors, large bathroom, detached garage, nice fenced-in backyard, and the road was just paved in front of it. So there's a couple, some good property that I have for sale, but I sure could use some more if somebody's got a house that they're considering selling. I would appreciate a call. I do have a potential one with 42 acres out in the Hanover area. So if someone's looking for a farmhouse with some land, give me a call. My phone number is 780-3800, and I look forward to hearing it from everyone.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks, Bill.